It's Tuesday morning, April 16th, 1912, and the headline splashed across the Buffalo Courier newspaper has shaken the city. Titanic sinks, 1,200 drown. The steamship, celebrated for its size and opulence, had left Southampton's White Star dock on her maiden voyage April 10th and struck an iceberg while en route to New York. Titanic, once thought unsinkable, was lost, along with nearly half of her passengers and crew. Among the many articles about the tragedy, one column offers a list of known survivors. Scrolling down the hastily developed manifest of misspelled names, two of local interest are missing: Henry Suthall and Edward Austin Kent. Suthall and Kent were two Erie County residents lost to the depths of the North Atlantic that evening, and though they shared a common fate, the men were of very different stations in life, and their experiences aboard RMS Titanic were quite different. Henry Suthall's childhood was far from privileged. His family emigrated from England in 1895 when Henry was only 9 years old. They settled in Kenmore, a small suburb just north of Buffalo city limits. There, his mother ran a small confectionery and ice cream shop. His father, Henry Sr., was a highly skilled plasterer, specializing in decorative designs. Henry worked as a trimmer, installing and repairing upholsteries in carriages and automobiles. When that work wasn't available, he took on odd farm jobs like picking peaches in California. He also found work as a musician, a talent he shared with other members of the family. At the time of his voyage, Henry was 26 years old. He purchased a ticket for Titanic's third-class accommodations for $35. The equivalent of just over $1,000 today. There were 709 third-class passengers aboard the ship, many of them immigrants headed for a new life in America, but the reason for Henry's passage aboard Titanic was quite unique, for it marked the end of a 2-year-long world tour he had taken with a friend, Howard Irwin. Together, Henry and Howard traveled the U.S. from Buffalo to San Francisco, hitting all the major cities in between. After California, they were off to Australia, Egypt, the Mediterranean, and England. As Howard recorded in a diary recovered from the wreck of Titanic, quote, "With luck, this trip will take us 2 years. And with bad luck, well, we're going anyway." In Australia, Henry met a girl and fell in love. In letters that he mailed home to his family in Kenmore, he told of his intent to return to Australia to marry her. On April 10, 1912, Titanic departed from Southampton's White Star Line dock. But of the two men, only Henry was on board. His friend Howard was not on the ship. Several theories exist as to why Howard didn't make the trip. One has him returning to the States early to tend to a sick girlfriend. Another has him parting with Henry to see a former flame. Still another, more sensationalized account, has him being abducted and sold into slavery, only to escape once the ship had already left port. Henry Suthall's body was never found, or if it was improperly identified. Like so many of the third-class passengers aboard Titanic, little is known of his final hours. So convinced was the Metropolitan Life Insurance Company of his death, however, that within 12 hours of RMS Carpathia's arrival in New York City, that's the ship that rescued more than 700 survivors, the insurance company paid out Suthall's $1,000 policy. It's believed that his was the first policy to be paid out as a result of the Titanic's sinking. As administrator of his estate, Henry's father received $200 in damages from the White Star Line. In an interesting twist to this story, in 1998, Barbara Shuttle of Erie, Pennsylvania was watching a show on the Discovery Channel titled Titanic, Anatomy of a Disaster, when something caught her attention. As the camera panned over a handwritten letter which had been recovered from a trunk on the ocean floor, she noticed the letter was signed by Mrs. Shuttle. The letter also featured the names Roy and Pearl. Barbara and her husband recognized the names as belonging to those of his great-grandmother, his grandfather, and his grandfather's sister, Pearl. The letter was one of about 20 found in a trunk belonging to Henry Suthall's traveling companion, Howard, who again did not make his return trip to the States aboard Titanic. It's believed that Henry was safekeeping Howard's belongings in his absence and planned to return them once they could reunite back home. The letter offers reassurances to Howard that his girlfriend Pearl was, in fact, still in love with him. "You ask me if the love I had was dying," Pearl wrote. "I say not." The letters, along with some other recovered items of Howard's, have toured around the world as part of the Titanic Artifact Traveling Exhibit. In fact, seeing his calling card in a recent visit to this exhibit is what inspired me to write this episode. As for the other local man aboard Titanic, the details of his life are known in far greater detail. His name was Edward Austin Kent, and his experiences aboard the ill-fated ship in its final moments played out like a scene from the James Cameron film. Titanic was carrying Kent home after a two-month trip to France and Egypt. Kent even delayed his return in order to partake in the liner's maiden voyage. After all, the ship was the finest ever built and purportedly unsinkable. Unlike Suthall, who was limited to third-class accommodations, Kent was a first-class passenger staying in cabin B-37, with access to the ship's premier amenities like its gymnasium, its Turkish baths, and its premier lounges. Kent was no stranger to high society. At 58 years old, he was a well-respected architect with buildings in Buffalo, Chautauqua, and Toronto. At the time of his voyage, he had taken up residence at Delaware Avenue's Buffalo Club, living among the city's many mansions and millionaires. During the voyage, he mingled with other socialites, including writer Helen Churchill Candy and Archibald Gracie. Kent was born in Bangor, Maine in 1854. Following the Civil War, his family relocated to Buffalo, where his father opened the department store Flint & Kent. Kent created a number of intriguing works in Buffalo, including the Unitarian Universalist Church on Elmwood in 1906, the Chemical No. 5 Firehouse in 1894, the Temple Beth Zion in 1890, and the Otto Building in 1896, which served as the location for his father's Main Street department store. He also helped found the Buffalo Society of Architects. Following Titanic's collision with the iceberg, crewmen chaotically loaded the ship's short supply of lifeboats, hardly enough to keep half the ship's passengers safe. As the ship sank, Kent disregarded his own safety to help women and children into the lifeboats. Accounts state that he went below deck several times to alert people to the danger and assist them. Amidst the chaos upon deck, Kent ran into his friend Helen Churchill Candy, who entrusted to him a silver flask and an ivory and gold miniature of her mother, Mary Churchill Hungerford. Candy feared she may lose the heirloom when climbing into the lifeboats. She passed it to Kent, who slipped it into his pocket before seeing her to safety. Kent was last seen by her, waving from the railing of the listing vessel. One account passed down through Kent family history holds that Edward had already secured a place in a lifeboat when he spotted a man on board who he knew to have a wife and family. According to the account, Kent swapped places with the man, voluntarily returning to the deck of the doomed ship. Within 4 hours of the tragedy, the RMS Carpathia arrived at the scene, rescuing hundreds from the icy waters. In the days that followed, an erroneous report circulated that Kent was among those rescued. However, when Carpathia arrived in New York City the evening of April 16th, any hopes for his survival were extinguished. On Friday, April 27th, the First Unitarian Church at West Ferry, a building of Kent's own design, was filled to capacity for his memorial service. The church was decorated in white azaleas, hydrangeas, ferns, palms, and flowers. The Reverend Richard W. Boynton of Buffalo and Thomas R. Slicer of New York City led the service. The sermon spoke of Kent's sacrifice in placing others before him. To only a few of us come the supreme chance, as it came to Mr. Kent, to show the real, innate substance of our character. And when that time arrived, how many could hope to meet that crisis with a sublime courage and in the heroic manner of Edward Kent? How many of us could stand calm and courageous in that last hour and give all of our strength to the aid and rescue to the helpless and weak, knowing that there was no chance for our escape from an awful death? During the Mass, word had reached Buffalo via telegram that Kent's body had been recovered. The message was hurried to the church, but not openly announced. Still, the news managed to spread throughout the congregation. Kent's body had been recovered by the cable ship McKay Bennett. The ship had been tasked with the retrieval and embalming of any remaining victims. Leaving from Halifax, Nova Scotia, April 17th, it arrived at the scene of the disaster April 20th. Once in the area, the ship's crew boarded its lifeboats and began manually recovering bodies. In total, the crew collected remains of 306 passengers. Kent's body, recovered around April 20th, among them. Kent's remains were labeled body number 258. On a small note card, the crew detailed his appearance, his clothing, and his personal effects. Estimated age, 56. Gray mustache and hair. Gray coat. Dress suit and pants. Effects, 2 gold signet rings, gold watch, and gold eyeglasses. A knife, 2 pocketbooks, 2 studs, 1 link. 1 silver flask, and 1 gold-framed miniature of Mary Churchill Hungerford. As a first-class passenger, Kent's body was stored in the ship's rear locker alongside those of Isidore Strauss, owner of Macy's department store, and financier John Jacob Astor IV. His body was positively identified by Flint and Kent employee J.G. Eppendorf upon the ship's arrival in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Second-class passengers recovered by the McKay Bennett were embalmed and stored in the ship's forward cable locker. And as for the 116 third-class passengers that had been recovered, they were buried at sea. Among them, only 56 were ever identified. So, there's a chance, albeit a small one, that the body of Henry Suthall was among those summarily interred to the sea that day. Kent was laid to rest in Buffalo's Forest Lawn Cemetery in his family plot. The epitaph upon his headstone reads, "Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." Now, we should mention that while Suthall and Kent were two residents of Erie County that were lost on Titanic, there were others either from or with connections to adjacent counties in southern Ontario who also perished, nearly 30 in all. In perhaps another point of interest, just 3 years after the sinking of Titanic, another well-known Western New Yorker, Roycroft campus founder Albert Hubbard, was also lost along with his wife Alice on a passenger steamship. On May 7, 1915, their ship, the RMS Lusitania, was struck by a German torpedo 11 miles off the coast of Ireland. The act, less than a year into World War I, would change the hearts and minds of many in America who felt that the country should remain uninvolved with European affairs, and it would draw us ever closer to war. But that is a story for another day. Today's episode of the Buffalo History Museum podcast was researched, written, and produced by me, Anthony Greco. With the publishing of this episode, our podcast has now surpassed 50,000 downloads and continues to grow every day. It has been downloaded in every U.S. state and more than 100 countries around the world. Help us to keep this growth going by sharing it with your friends and family. And also, if you haven't done so already, please be sure to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back in just a few weeks with another story. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you soon. The Buffalo History Museum receives operating support from Erie County, the City of Buffalo, the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Kathy Hochul and the New York State Legislature. Additional support is provided by M&T Bank and from our donors, members, and friends.